I was away last lecture, so I recorded the lecture, but I'm not so sure if you guys have really seen it or not. But anyway, I'll do a three minute review of what we learned in the last lecture. So, well, so it's a review of scrambling. We are interested in the following phenomena. Is a Hayden Preskill thought experiment, right? So, B is E prime, this is EPL, this is the board radiation, this is a reference, this is the board, RE radiation. And then we have seen that the mutual information between A prime and DB becomes nearly maximal when ND is larger than NA. So it's recoverable. But and then in order to derive this one, we use like a minimal surface-like formula. So that was what we did for Hayden Preskill. But the question was, can we do the same thing with the actual dynamics of the black hole? So, and then to address this question, we studied something called scrambling. And scrambling is different from summarization. It's related to the growth of the operator. That is, we consider the operator in the Heisenberg picture. So this is a local operator. But if H is sufficiently chaotic, strongly interacting, and so on, if T is very large, then this will become a global operator, non-local operator. So this growth of the operator is the same as scrambling. Okay. But why is this interesting? Is because I will prove that the scrambling implies Hayden Preskill recoverability. All right, so that's why scrambling was very important. But now, even though this scrambling is a well-defined concept, like growth of the operators and so on, the question was, how do we really measure it? And then we have seen that this object called out of time ordered correlation function is important. Looks like this. And the point was that if V is local, W is local, a very local operator, then V and W will commute with each other. So this correlator decomposes something like that. This is usually equals to 1. We normalize it properly, so nothing happens. But if W is non-local, then this quantity goes to 0 or a small value. So by computing this quantity or measuring this quantity, we can detect the size of the operator. The reason is that if W has an overlap with V, then this strange ordering starts to make an important difference. Okay, so that's kind of the quick review. So hope everything is clear. Okay. Good, good. So what am I going to talk today? Okay, good. Okay. So today I want to discuss how to measure OTOC or out of time ordered correlation function. As we have seen, this quantity is very strange. It's in order to measure this quantity, it looks like we need a time machine to go to the future and then come back to the past. It's strange. And so it's very strange to think such a quantity is related to actual observable physical phenomena. But it turns out it's a measurement. When I say it's measurement, I don't really mean experimental realization, but it's more like a physical realization. This vortex. So the point is that we actually don't need no time machine needed. And instead of time machine, we are going to use entanglement. So just to recap, we are interested in the following quantity. Okay, correlation function, which is defined as trace or identity operator divided by the dimension of the Hilbert space. Then we do the thing. So that means that we are computing this quantity with respect to this maximally mixed state. Now, in order to understand this quantity, it's convenient to represent it in terms of diagrams. And just diagram. So yeah, it's just picture. So these boxes are operators. I need to make sure that these boxes are not too big. So we apply VW, VW, so V at 0, W at T. Then we multiply it in this vertical direction, right? Then since we are taking the trace, we need to connect these two lines. This just means that if we expand this operator in terms of basis, like grand ket, then this I indices should match with this I indices. That's what we mean by trace. Now we need this factor, 1 over d factor, and then I usually use this black dot to represent the factor of 1 over square root d. Turns out this is very convenient for certain reason. But anyway, these two factors in total explains this 1 over d factor. So OTOC is just this object. But you still see that we need a time machine to measure this quantity, right? But there is a interesting trick. And so this is just another interpretation of OTOC in the so-called doubled Hilbert space. It's an equivalent quantity, but another interpretation. And by doubled, I mean that we are going to prepare two copies of the same Hilbert. Okay. Now, how do I think about it? Well, we just view this diagram as it is. But the point here is that this object, this line, this here, it's actually what it means is, remember that this is 1 over d factor. And then this line means that if you have I state here, I indices be here. So this is nothing but, right? So then this is actually an EPR pair. Okay. So this is actually a very, it's a just a way of interpretation, but it's very important. So let me repeat. Originally, we defined this trace and this quantity on the Hilbert space H, the single Hilbert space. This is this line, and then this line going on the right hand side was just a trace, right? So this line was not like a physical line in this interpretation. And everything was defined on the one of the Hilbert space. So let me call it left only. But in this case, we can interpret this line under this, especially the right hand side, the line we used as a physical Hilbert space by making the identical copy of the Hilbert space. Now, with this interpretation, now you see that this part is actually a EPR, and this part is actually also EPR. Then, so this ODOC can be rewritten as follows. Is I have EPL, and then okay, so that's the same quantity. So now here, this one, the original operator, this acts on the left Hilbert space, and this, well, it's identity, but it's act on the right Hilbert space. So, but this is just a different interpretation of a out of time order correlation function. Okay? But you may still think like nothing has really happened, because still we need a time machine to do this quantity. But turns out the there's one more trick we can use. That is the following famous equality. That is one. That is hitting EPR pair by V operator is same as hitting EPR pair on the right hand side with its transpose. Now transpose is just change I and J. Oh, it's defined. And then you can just verify this explicitly by putting this into the equation. Okay, this is transpose. This trick is nice because this means that you can send the operator acting on the left hand side to the right hand side. And in terms of equation, this looks complicated, at least it looks complicated to me. But with these diagrams be acting on left hand side, you just need to pull this operator along this line, right? Then you notice that when you go through the lower side, you are changing kind of the direction of the V. So it actually becomes like upside down. That's why you So with these, I think it's now getting more and more clear how to measure otok. But this, looking at this diagram, the trick is we are going to send this V to the left-hand side. What happens is this otok, the same quantity, actually equals to how do I do it? Okay, actually let me just send W to the left. I mean it's same, but that makes my task easier. This is P, not dagger. I just pull the WT to the right hand side by using that identity. But then I can explicitly write down this thing following mana. So it's expectation value of this is on HL. Okay, so this is just the rewrite. So now with this, we know that how to now measure OTOC. So first, we are going to define a certain state that looks like, okay. This can be easily prepared by hitting EPR pair with V operator. Then you can rewrite this otok as this expectation value of the following observable. Right, it's just I'm just rewriting everything. But well, actually, like, yeah, just one thing I wanted to mention is like here, if yeah, V dagger is equals to V, but this is possible when we yeah take V as a Pauli operator.
So, yeah, here just sending one of them.
Mm-hmm.
In that identity, we had identity on things we see. Does that identity also hold if we have, say, W there or something like that? Because
oh, yeah. It's just this object. Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can just verify it very carefully, but at the end of the day, what we are doing is just draw a diagram. All right, so.
That's a question.
Yes.
So, once you have this perspective on the otok, is there a reason to keep the original definition with two W as opposed to changing the original definition to have W and W transpose?
WT, yeah.
Like, I should have roughly the same behavior.
It's roughly the same thing, but of course, the original definition with time machine, that is like that can measure all the possible form of vortex, even like V1, V2, V3, V4, yeah, all kinds of possibilities. But with this trick, it's a bit more restricted. So I could choose W, this W as other W. So it could be like, I don't know, X tau or something. That's perfectly possible. So this part is arbitrary. But this is needed.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a restriction. And that's related to the fact that this quantity, it's a expectation value. So it should, if I pick Hermitian operator, I should get a real value. But even if I pick Hermitian operators, well, this is infinite temperature. Okay, so it's I don't want to go into details of this, but yeah, this is a little bit more restricted, but yeah, it's not that bad. Yeah. All right. So, just in words, what we should do is instead of using a time machine, we prepare EPR pairs. Of course, this preparing a EPR pair is in actual experiment, it costs a lot. But I mean, maybe you already noticed where we are going. But in black hole, this EPR pair is already given. And then apply perturbation on the left hand side. Then later you time over the operator and then measure 2-point correlator at time t. Okay, so this is actually a very cool trick in a sense, like you can, you know, pull the string and then push some operator onto the other side if you have entanglement. So then you can actually tweak a little bit about like a causal ordering. This is actually quite interesting from, I think, a fundamental viewpoint.
I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if another way to do this would be to, like, you know, sort of do like quantum teleportation in the middle of the two chunks. Like you sort of,
mm-hmm.
Instead of like having it be a line, you like bring one of them down and you have one EPR pair come up and then one EPR pair close up. Does that make sense? Can I draw it maybe?
If you want, yeah, yeah.
I was just wondering if this would also work if like redo this, like
I see, I see. Yeah, yeah, that works as well. Yeah. So for that one, yeah. So you are in four copies of the Hilbert space. And then here you apply a projection operator onto EPR pair. Yeah, you need to measure. Ah, I see. Yeah, yeah, but this certainly works. Yeah. But it's more complicated to make, right? But so yeah, these lines in the tensor network, it just line can be identity operator or it can be an EPR pair. And anyway, yeah, it's interesting interpretations. So now let me take a little bit of detour and then discuss many body chaos, because I think some of you have taken a course on classical and quantum chaos. Now I think it's time to learn a little bit about many body chaos. And there's no formal definition of many body chaos because this subject is very new. But people tend to call this phenomenon of scrambling as a quantum chaos. I would like to argue, like, in what sense this is a chaos. Now, what we should do is we prepare this operator, this state, which was this thing, right? Then we need to time evaluate. So t equals to 0 time t, then this state becomes something like this. Okay, now u is defined as e to the minus iht. U star is just a complex conjugate. The reason why you should have u star instead of u dagger is that we already have dagger by sending one operator to the other side. That's the reason why we have star. It's not a big deal. Okay. Then for this state, we are going to measure the correlation function between left and right. But what if we didn't do anything, like v is equals to identity, just identity operator, what happens? Then it turns out that, well, at t equals 0, the state we have is just EPR pair, of course. But at time t, we still have EPR pair. Yeah, I think. Because pulling u star to the other side brings you transpose. The transpose of a complex star is just u dagger, so this one is equals to EPR. So then for v equals 1, if there is no perturbation at all, then you see that this two-point correlation function should be equals to 1, especially if the Pauli operator, right? Because equals to 1, okay? So the point is that if you don't make any perturbation, your state remains the same because this u and u star cancels, so nothing happens. And if you measure two-point correlator, then they are correlated in the same way, so you don't detect anything. But, well, if v is equals not equals to identity, then, well, and of course, is not equals to EPL anymore. And then they are very different. Then you are basically checking like how much this system changed by computing the two-point correlation function. Now, why do I want to call it chaos? Again, I'm not gonna formally define what chaos means, even in a classical sense. But typically, when we study classical chaos, or even like a emergence of chaos from quantum systems, normally what we study is we prepare two system, right? system 1 and system 2. They are actually identical state. They are not interacting with each other, and then they just do whatever they want to do. But it's the same system, okay? Then same system, if evolve in the same way, then you should end up with the same final state. Okay, so this is a time evolution. Right, it's of course, it's because it's deterministic. Initial state and final state. Initial state and final state. But now suppose that we are gonna make a tiny, tiny perturbation to one of the system. Like, I don't know, you just flip the spin a little bit, or just, you know, just change the parameter a little bit. Then the point is that in the classical chaotic systems, this tiny difference in the initial condition can be amplified significantly, and at later time, very different. This is what we call chaos, I think. And this is, of course, the reason why we call it the butterfly effect. You know, butterfly flying or not can make a significant difference future. And so this is how we tend to interpret classical chaos. But one possible characterization of many-body chaos, given these definitions and the measurement of out-of-time ordered correlation function, what we should do probably is the following. Instead of identical object, we prepare two systems, identical systems, but we are going to assume that they are entangled in a macroscopic way. Right? Okay. Like EPR pair, for instance. Then we time evolve two systems. This time it's U and U star. But we just make a time evolution. And then if we don't add any perturbation, the system remains to be the same. So things should entangle in the same manner. But if we make a little bit of like tiny, tiny perturbation, just single spin flip on the left hand side, what happens is that at a later time, the structure of the entanglement changes completely. Different entanglement. Namely, in EPR pairs, one qubit is entangled with the other qubits, everything is localized. But after the time evolution, you don't find such simple structure. Like single qubit here may be entangled with some like very global degree of freedom and so. Now, this operator basically checks if, let's say, if it acts on ith qubit, then qubit I on left and the qubit I on right are entangled or not. Now, if nothing happened, if we didn't apply any perturbations, then two qubit must be entangled in the same way, so I should be able to measure like a big expectation value. But if I added tiny perturbation here, then this pair of qubits, the way they are entangled, no longer the same. actually they are not, no longer entangled with each other. So in this sense, its structure is very similar. In the classical case, you prepare two objects, same object, and then see the outcome. In the OTOC or many-body quantum chaos, we study entanglement and how entanglement changes under tiny, tiny perturbation. And the point is that even the very tiny perturbation can make a significant difference at the end of the day.
So in the Q&A last week, we had a questions and some discussion about what is the formal difference or distinction between quantum chaos and scrambling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, that's a good point, good question. So traditionally, so first of all, classical chaos is just classical systems, so it's different. But now, traditionally, when we talk about quantum chaos, it's a few body systems, and then we usually discuss one big spin, like not qubit, but spin with a large number of degree of freedom, and how your spin behaves in the phase space and so on to discuss chaotic behaviors. So it's usually a one spin or two spin problems. But in the many-body chaos, it's more like your qubits are just tiny ingredients in the big system. So in this case, it's very important that we are dealing with n-qubit systems where your perturbation is a local object, local perturbation, then that perturbation can spread all system. And that's how we should study these OTOC scrambling and many-body chaos. Now, I think traditionally, when people complain about quantum chaos, people tend to say like, oh yeah, you prepare two states, they unitarily evolve, so their mutual overlap doesn't change because it's unitary, so there is no chaos in quantum mechanics and so on. Which is a true statement in a sense that distance doesn't change, but here we are dealing with something more different in a sense like, yeah, we are interested in initially localized object, localized perturbation can go to the whole systems and so on. That's how we characterize quantum chaos. Yeah, but there have been like lots of papers, not lots, but some papers which try to compare like classical quantum chaos and the many-body auto chaos and so on. A relation, sometimes they are related in many cases, but there are examples where they are not really related. Right, so what? Okay, yeah, okay.
We say different entanglement in this in many body chaos. Can we are we interested in precisely how it is entangled, or
I mean it's very it would be great if we can check that, like how it's entangled. So remember that the EPR pairs are like this, right? So qubit one is entangled with qubit one on the right, and then two is entangled with two. N is entangled with N. Okay. So that's the initial EPR pairs. It's very simple. This one, it's pairing. But now we apply perturbation to this qubit and then let the system evolve. It's U tensor U star and so on. Then, yeah, things get mixed up. And what it happens is that if I pick this qubit one, then I can ask like which qubit or which degree of freedom this one should be entangled with in the left hand side. It's not like this or this, but it's more like it's entangled with a more complicated, like global degree of freedom. It's not something you can easily find. And then if you really want to understand which degree of freedom this is entangled with, you need to measure and access that degree of freedom, but it's very difficult to measure it. And this outlook is nice because it's still measurable, because by saying that, okay, at least I can say that this one is no longer entangled with this. Right? The one is no longer entangled with another one. One is no longer entangled another two, and so on. So that's something we can check with this out of time ordered correlation function. It turns out this is enough to make some conclusion about black holes. Yeah, so fully characterizing how the entanglement structure changes, it's a very difficult problem, and it's especially for many body systems, it's experimentally not really feasible. But still, we can get really good clue about how it changed by measuring such like local correlation function. That's why this autoc is very important. Now I'm forgetting like what kind of a problem set I prepared and so on. I think I have put some problem of autoc, and that is we have been using how random unitary as a kind of proxy of scrambling dynamics. So then, how random scrambling and then computing autoc value is actually an interesting exercise. So for these correlation functions, if V and W are Pauli operator, then you see that this guy will be a summation of the all kinds of Pauli operators. But essentially, this P is a very high weight operator. So because of that, this approaches to zero. And that's because you will have anti-commutation and commutation roughly with the equal probability. So indeed, how random satisfy the condition of scrambling. In fact, we can make a more even interesting statement and then predict the generic feature of a scrambling. So you can compute this generic form of the out of time ordered correlation function by assuming your dynamics to be unitary, is actually how random unitary. Then it turns out that this one, you can show that this is approximately equals to I'll just write down the formula, and I think you are asked to derive this one in homework or tutorial. But the point is that this formula should hold with very, very small error. Actually, in the case of the HAL, it's exponentially suppressed.
Sorry, does the first term should have a W in it?
It does.
Something like this. So you can actually use this as a kind of the definition of scrambling. And then, so whenever you see such a decomposition with very small error, in actual physical system, actually it goes only like 1 over n. But for her, it goes like physical system. But for her, it goes actually like e to the minus n. But as long as this is small, then we can call it scrambling. So you can use this as a definition, scrambling, and you can actually prove the recoverability of the hidden presque. Okay, so we have studied scrambling and so on. Now, I have been avoiding to talk about like gravity stuff because it needs a big introduction to compute this out of time model correlation function in a formal way. But still, I think I should a little bit talk about it. So let me just argue that the black hole is scrambling. And then let me just give you an intuition of how people have computed this quantity in actual black holes. And this calculation can be done in this time machine situation and also this EPL no time machine situation, both of them, at least in the ADS CFT correspondence. So I'll just talk about this entanglement EPL trick. So yeah, so black hole is a scrambler, but why is that? And then the point is that there is an object which is called a two-sided black hole. This is just you have two black holes which are entangled in a very special and clean manner. But this two-sided black hole is entangled black hole, so it works roughly like this EPR pairs. Well, it's a thermal entanglement, very roughly speaking. Please. Now, again, I'm gonna draw the Penrose diagram without really defining it, but this is the left hand side, right hand side. These two sides are entangled with each other. And this wiggly line is singularity. And lower part is like just kind of white hole. You prepare it and then the black hole. Okay, wait, wait, this. Now we want to imitate. I should move it up probably. Yeah, so what we should do is, okay, we have prepared EPR pair already by preparing two entangled black hole. So in that many-body chaos picture, these two dot the spheres are actually black holes entangled with each other. And now what we should do is you should butter up the system left-hand side by, I don't know, shaking or hitting the ADS boundary. Okay, then this will create some signal that falls into the black hole. Okay, then eventually it will enter the black hole and maybe hits the singularity. Now, then we make a time evolution, and then later we are going to measure two-point correlation function between left and right. That's what we are doing. Then, because there is this signal going into the black hole, we expect that because we inserted something here, so this correlation between these two operators will change. But when you throw something into the black hole, you will expect like this will be accelerated a lot. So because of this effect, and then black hole near the horizon, actually it has a surface gravity, so it has some acceleration. And then, yeah, the effect of this signal becomes stronger and stronger, especially seen from these boundaries. So then this introduces a significant back reaction to the geometry. So So this geometry is actually no longer a good geometry. And this signal try to cross the horizon. But then there is an interesting GL solution, which is called the gravitational shock wave, which essentially says that, well, you have some high energy object near the horizon. This introduces a shift in metric. It's just a simple shift. And this shift works in the following way. That is, if you try to go in this direction, but then you hit this gravitational shock wave, you sort of get shifted to this direction. So there is really a shift. And the strength of shift is related to this kind of energy for this shock. Of course, this is an approximate solution, which is true near the horizon. But roughly speaking, you will see some shift.
So here, the shockwave is created by
particles. Yes. Yes. And then this time separation needs to be large enough so that this effect becomes stronger and stronger, and then close to the horizon. Then you can start using the solution. But this is, again, I want to emphasize that this is approximate solution.
Okay, could you, why does that time interval has to be large?
Sorry?
The time interval you said between VL and...
Yes. Otherwise, so let me, yeah, I'll come back to that. Now, it introduces a shift. Then this will change, this shift will change the structure of the entanglement. The reason is, it's just very simple. It's not even a calculation, but So suppose that I have a shift here of the metric. Approximately, this is true, right? I mean, it's near the horizon. Then it just make a shift, so it will look like this. The point is that the left-hand side and right-hand side becomes a bit far apart because of the shift. Namely, if you try to draw the shortest path between left and right, then yeah, it's okay. I'm not sure if this is really the geodesic or not, but point is like this portion makes the distance bigger. In the unshifted diagram, what it means is you need to go like this. But the point is that left-hand side and right-hand side are separated a little bit. Then when you compute correlation function, this correlation function, usually the system has a correlation length. So if these two points are close to each other, you will have stronger correlations. But now your distance is separated. So then that makes your signal weaker in a sense like this. Initially it has some finite value, but this one goes to zero or very small or small value as this shift. Now the strength of this shift, this geodesic line fields, this shift, this is roughly related to this E. Yeah. So you need to take this T very large so that this effect of the signal becomes very, very strong here. It introduces a strong shift. Then you will see a strong decay of the two-point correlation function. Okay, so this is very roughly speaking how you can compute the out of time order correlation function in the ADS black hole. And this is actually, this calculation is exactly what's done in the original paper by Schenker and Stanford in 2015. I think 2012. They did a calculation for 2+1D black holes because it's very simple and you have a nice shockwave solution there. And so, and then, yeah, they just computed this geodesic length and then, computed the decay of the OTOC. At that time, they didn't name it OTOC because they didn't know that this quantity is actually out of time ordered correlation functions. But later, people have figured out that, especially Kitaev found out that this is, I don't know how he came up with this, but he somehow noticed that this is out of time ordered correlation function. But anyway, the upshot here is that in order to measure out of time ordered correlation function, you don't need time machine. And you actually replace a time machine with EPR pairs or entanglement. And then with this viewpoint, you can view it as a many body chaos. And this is exactly what's happening in the black hole. You throw some signal into the black hole. And then you can already see similarity with Hayden-Preskill thought experiment because this signal going into the black hole is your diary. So this is something you want to. And then the statement of the Hayden-Preskill is like, if you wait enough time and catch this radiation or this degree of freedom, then you should be able to reconstruct this diary because of the scrambling. So that's a prediction. Anyway, I'm going to prove the recoverability model by using scrambling dynamics. But I'm going to do it. Okay, anyway, thank you.